elsewhere. Could you say something about how television affected you personally during the Tet crisis in 1968?
Yes. In my office in the White House, there was a television set. I had a remote control device. And I worked late most evenings. And about 6:30, I would flip on the evening news as I wrote or worked. I would look up at it, and frequently I would see Vietnam. I guess I watched it from out of two points of view, one the natural one of interest and another an interest in what the American people were seeing. I think probably Johnson's fascination with news, with television sets and with wire tickers, he had two or three tickers in his office, was both a desire to know what was going on and to have a sense of what the public was learning at the same time. I think the most powerful moment of my encounter with this television set across the room, the thing that hit me the hardest, came one evening, maybe a year before Tet, when I flipped it on and saw a film of a Marine walking through a village. The Marines had cleared out the Viet Cong, but the Viet Cong had used this village as a staging area for some time. And in order to prevent that any further, the Marines set fire to it. And there was a Marine, non-com, walking through the village with his Zippo lighter, touching it to the edges of these thatch roof huts, the eaves of those huts. And they caught fire quickly. I watched it with total horror. I knew what, at least from the point of view of someone who was alive during the Second World War and the Korean War, I had some idea what war was about. But this, the immediacy of this, the almost casual way in which this American seemed to be burning down the homes of people who were not themselves Viet Cong, affected me very deeply. I thought about it late into that evening, and the next morning I went to see Bill Moyers, which must have meant this was in 66 before he left, and told him that I thought we had to make some profound decisions about the coverage of the war. At the time, I think I was really thinking that we ought to cut it. We ought to impose censorship on the war. I assumed that this sort of thing would have to be done, that we would burn down villages in order to get the VC out. And I thought it was so degrading and depressing that to show it on evening television as people sat down to dinner would destroy the war effort. Either that or we had to stop burning down people's houses, and that the choice seemed to be pretty clear.
All right. Now you got that, Joe, didn't you? Okay. I'd say in that case, what you did is just fine. I think I'll get you to hand me the book so you won't be tempted to scratch it, because okay. We'll get that on the Niagara. But let's see.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want this on film?
I'd say not, no. Okay. You might want to get just a little bit of it, but no, I guess quotation that is Aaron Chandler on 81 and over on 82.
Okay, ready to go?
Yeah.
I felt we were being put to it as hard as we ever had, and I was extremely disturbed. I would go in two or three mornings a week and study the cable book and talk to Rostow and ask him what had happened the day before, and would get from him what almost seemed hallucinatory from the point of view of what I had seen on network television the night before. Well, I must say that I mistrusted what he said, although I don't say with any confidence that I was right to mistrust him. Because like millions of other people who had been looking at television the night before, I had the feeling that the country had just about had it, that they would simply not take any more. I suppose from a social scientist's point of view, it's particularly interesting that people like me, people who had some responsibility for expressing the presidential point of view, could be so affected by the media as everyone else was, while downstairs, within 50 yards of my desk, was that enormous panoply of intelligence-gathering devices, tickers, radios, messages coming in from the field. I assume the reason this is so, the reason I put aside my own interior access to confidential information and was more persuaded by what I saw on the tube and in the newspapers, was that like everyone else who had been deeply involved in explaining the policies of the war and trying to understand them and render some judgment, I was fed up with the light at the end of the tunnel stuff. I was fed up with the optimism that seemed to flow without stopping from Saigon.
All right, fine, thank you. Harry, I'd like you to say something about the impact of the General Loan photograph and news film, and say something about when you first saw it and what its impact was to you.
Well, I must have seen it the first night it was shown on television in the States. It hit me as very hard, and I remember being impressed in some way by the fact that it was shown twice. It was in the same newscast that they showed it, described what we were seeing, and then went back and showed it again, which was most unusual for any television. And this seemed to be saying, watch this, this is important. I was dismayed. I had known Loan. I'd known him. I had met him in Saigon in May of 1967, about 6 months earlier. He showed up one night looking rather like a mischievous wild dog. He came to a dinner at which there were General Abrams and myself and another man, another American, and a number of Vietnamese in the government. And he was treated as a kind of raffish scoundrel by the American I was with. And here he was, blowing somebody's brains out on the streets of Saigon. And I guess I felt that this was proof that we were backing a regime without scruples. Proof, too, that we were involved up to our necks in a war between alien cultures, alien to us, in which we had very little in common. You may recall during the Vietnam period when, at least early on, the common expression from people that this was that Asians did not place the same value on life that we did. Therefore, it was not surprising that they would kill any number of people or cause any number of people to die. It didn't really matter to them. But that began to excuse or rationalization began to pall after a while. And one felt simply that we shouldn't be there. In those days, I have difficulty as I look back on these things in separating what I felt from as a citizen, as a person observing these events on television, and What I felt as a close advisor and employee of President Johnson's, and very much involved in the war effort, I was I had running in me, I guess, ideologically, the two elements of being of a Cold Warrior and of someone who felt that Vietnam was the wrong place to fight any kind of war for us. I had friends on both sides and had ever since 1961 when our first involvement, as a matter of fact, much earlier, 1952, when I was an officer in the Air Force and I briefed people on the kind of war that was going on with the Viet Minh. I'd been much involved. Vietnam had seemed like a climate of life to me. But I was essentially supportive of the war effort at the time. By the time I went to the White House in 1965, and these events shown on television, this reality as I saw it, the reality of death and of destruction, of a casual death on the streets of Saigon, all that had an enormous impact, not only personally, but also politically, in the sense of what it meant to the public.
All right, thank you. Now what I'd like to do, I know you're getting sick and tired of this, but I'd like to roll a camera and ask you that same question.
And try to give a shorter answer.
But again, what you've added is extremely helpful to me, because this touches on things, again, that we are very interested in. But what I would like you to address directly for the camera will be the question, which I'll roll in a second again, of the specifically the general law on photograph and what impact it had on you.
Okay.
And I think if you
should I say I met him? Should I say I met him? Is that?
I think that's very helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'd move from the reference about the Oriental does not value human life to that photograph, because that slogan is one that a lot of Americans are familiar with and were at the time.
Yeah.
So let's roll this section again.
David, can you put your chair over here?
Sure.
I think the lighting will be better if you look on this side of the camera.
Okay.
Okay.
I think the public opinion swings with regard to Vietnam are still elusive in their meaning. My feeling is that Johnson was right in believing that his biggest public opinion problem with respect to Vietnam was with the Hawks, that despite the fact that people were outside chanting, "Hey, hey, LBJ," that a much larger number of Americans felt angry about Vietnam because we had not won it, because we hadn't beaten the bastards. And the vote for Gene McCarthy that was broken down by the Michigan Research Center in the vote in the presidential primary of 1968, McCarthy got 42% of that vote, a minority, but such a healthy minority that it seemed to indicate Johnson was quite vulnerable. The majority of that 42% was what the Michigan Center defined as a hawk vote, in the sense that people despise the war and wanted it over, but not by our turning tail and running, as the expression in those days went, rather by winning it, bombing the North Vietnamese, beating them down, forcing them to sue for peace. That feeling of an essential anger about Vietnam, but for the reasons that it wasn't being won, seems to me to be consistent with a support for the president. Of course, one also knows that in most international crises, The instinctive reaction of people, of the public, is to support the president. The public supported the president Kennedy after the Bay of Pigs, for God's sake, when it was clear that he had made a terrible boner, a very embarrassing one, and a very harmful one to our foreign policy. Public support rose because it rallies around the president, and in times of a foreign trouble. And the same, I think, was true in Tet, that people would naturally support the president. But it was a corroded and corroding support. It was one that was slowly crumbling, I think, from a number of reasons, not the least of which, and perhaps as Johnson thought, was that that we weren't winning the war, that it seemed endless.
All right. Hold that for a second.
American people, the big blow of Tet, certainly to me, and I think to most other people, was that an enemy who had been pounded by every means of sophisticated and unsophisticated warfare, bombed and burned and interdicted on the way south, hit in every possible way, resisted by special forces and by main force divisions, the whole works, could still mount an enormous effort, such as the Viet Cong did and the North Vietnamese did in early 1968, and that had an immediately depressing impact on me, and I think it did on many others. There was a feeling that, my God, these people are going to keep at it forever. I didn't really feel that they had beaten us in Tet. The word was clear after two or three days that we had not fallen apart, that there weren't large elements of our resistance that had folded. But we certainly had the feeling that they were still vital, still vigorous, that even having been beaten here, they would keep at it and come right back. They seemed tireless. They seemed to care a hell of a lot more about it than we did, certainly than the average American did, who wanted mostly to get out of it. But that, I think that's the meaning. That was what Tet meant. And then the question is, what does it show on, what showed on the television and in the papers? What was the message carried there? Essentially the same message. The enemy's tremendous vitality. I think the public's response was, as usual, is to support the president and support the government, support the national entity at a time of crisis. But that behind it, I think there was behind that surface support, I think there was the feeling of despair that the war could not be won with the effort we were making.
I think that's a fascinating response, and it seems to me it's a criticism that must be leveled of poll data. That this is one of the things that I could so easily imagine people responding to these questions about support for the war because of that perceived necessity to aid the country in time of need, mm-hmm. But it's hard for me to see how the visual images of Tet couldn't have terribly, terribly discouraged those mm-hmm. that come right before.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's roll.